All right, let's get started, everybody. Donald Trump is desecrating all of Washington, D.C., it feels like. Right now, they've built this ugly-ass UFC ring for his birthday in front of the White House. They used the Lincoln Memorial to do the weigh-in ceremony before the UFC fight, and it got nasty, which is literally the opposite of Lincoln's message of unity. Totally ridiculous. The Kennedy Center is being stripped of his name right now. They've thrown up a giant tarp, and they're forcing these poor government workers to be out there in the heat right now taking this down. A judge has ordered them to reinstall signs and exhibits at national parks all across the country about climate change and slavery. And then the algae has returned at the reflecting pool, even though I was told that that would never happen again because they painted it blue, which was always incredibly stupid. These guys are abusing the power of the federal government to strip us of our national identity, to desecrate these monuments, also that Donald Trump can build a legacy that he will never truly have, because his legacy will be that his administration is totally and completely falling apart in every possible way. Right now, the economy is the worst that it has been probably since the Great Recession 20 years ago. He cannot end this war in Iran. He cannot get the Strait of Hormuz open. Every 48 hours, he claims that there's a deal, backs away from it, then says he's going to annihilate Iran, backs away from it again. He's just absolutely stuck. They are panicked about the Epstein files cover-up, and the midterms are rapidly coming up, and Republican members of Congress are panicked. The polling is so bad that they think they're going to lose the United States Senate. It's just an insane situation all across the board. Adam, take it away and light these guys up.
Very, very well said. You know the vibe I get? It's like Trump deep down knows that he's going to die soon. Trump deep down knows that he's running out of time, and he's desperate to leave any sort of legacy, even if it means forcing himself, forcing his name on statues, signage, buildings, pamphlets, websites, trying to force his name on everything around him in order to have some lasting impact, because he knows deep down, as you pointed out, there's no lasting impact in his policies. I can't name one policy from his first term that will have a lasting impact. I can name some policies from his second term, but they're all bad. What is his impact going to be? Worldwide tariffs? That's his signature fiscal policy. Hell no. What's his long-term impact going to be? The Iran war? Hell no. What's his long-term impact going to be? The Epstein files? This is how he's going to be remembered. He understands that everything he's done has either been harmful, super minor, easily replaceable, or just destructive to the American psyche and the American economy. So that's why he put his name above the Kennedy Center. You know what was so corny about it? If you looked at the sign, you could see that the Kennedy Center had been there for like decades. Like, it looked like that was an old sign. And then it looked like somebody just superimposed, like, and Donald Trump and me too. Like, don't forget to include my name too. And it was like slightly different color, slightly different signage. So incredibly desperate. And what's even more humiliating is how rejected he's being. I would be humiliated if I were almost 80 years old. His birthday is tomorrow, right? And every single time you tried to have a lasting legacy or impact, you had to force yourself in it, and then it got taken away. I also just want to talk about the Epstein files for 1 second. We can expand on this more later, but there was a bombshell New York Times article that released about 2 days ago when it detailed how the White House held multiple Situation Room crisis meetings due to the Epstein files coming out. So when we're talking about Trump's legacy, I think it's very, very important that we reframe it around the cover-ups that this administration has done. In one decade, when Donald Trump is likely gone, in one decade when we are past this and we are rebuilding our institutions, I think Donald Trump should be remembered as somebody who is desperate, narcissistic. I think he should be remembered by January 6th, his election denial, and most specifically, his connection to Jeffrey Epstein. The same Situation Room where President Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden watched Osama bin Laden and that raid successfully go off, which, you know, should be a proud moment for America and our military. That same Situation Room was then bastardized and used so that Donald Trump could talk about his nipple fetish or try to cover up the Epstein files. Like, sorry to be candid and blunt about it, but there was reporting from the New York Times that Susie Wiles, Caroline Levitt, J.D. Vance, Cash Patel, Dan Bongino, and Donald Trump would go into Situation Room meetings because they realized how bad the Epstein file thing was. Then they realized there were new, there was new information coming out about Trump liking nipples so much that he would hurt women and leave them painful. And then
you got to put a trigger warning on that before you tell me stuff like that.
Yeah, trigger warning. It's a little too early, 9:22 in the morning. Get you some coffee before I'm talking about this type of stuff. But
no, I hate this world we live in. The reality, I don't want to know this.
Yeah, none of these words are in the Bible either. None of these words are in the Bible. Donald
they
Trump.
Left that, they left that out, I think.
Yeah, Donald Trump, none of that. I know it's gross, of course. But I mean, this was seen in emails and covered by the New York Times. You don't know what, honestly, when I saw somebody tweeting about this, I was on a flight and I thought it was just somebody kind of having like a tweak out. I'm like, why are people tweeting about nipples in the Situation Room? They have to be tweaking. And I looked up and the New York Times article, sourced and vetted, pops up, which is a little bit different than just seeing something on Twitter. So someone said it's 7:23 a.m. for some of us.
go back to bed. I'm sorry. We're glad you're here. Please stay.
Yeah, no, that's funny though. No, on a serious note, the legacy that Donald Trump is leaving is going to be absolutely brutal. And that's why if you check his Truth Social, he's posting like Mount Rushmore with his face on it. He's renaming these memorials after himself. Right now, they're not only removing Donald Trump's name from the Kennedy Center, but guess what else? They're removing it from the signage on the trucks, the pamphlets, the websites. I mean, this costs a lot of money. They had Donald Trump's name throughout everything. So I guess to summarize, it's all falling apart for him. The cover-up of the Epstein files falling apart. The economy has been spiraling. The Iran war, they cannot find an off-ramp. And then every attempt of Donald Trump to actually honor himself, like this America 250 celebration, like the stuff that he's building, this, it's falling apart. It's all falling apart.
Yeah, and so much of it's because he fundamentally doesn't understand what it means to be a great president. Like, he is obsessed with his legacy. He is obsessed with cultural relevancy. And he watched what Barack Obama was able to do in an 8-year period where Obama saved the economy, passed a signature piece of legislation, the Affordable Care Act, that made sure that tens of millions of Americans have access to affordable healthcare right now, particularly young people with pre-existing conditions. And he doesn't have any clue of how Obama was able to achieve that, which is why he has no signature legislative accomplishment. Like what? Are we going to talk about the Republican tax cuts, cutting Medicare and Medicaid? Are we going to talk about the corruption? Like, there's just nothing that he has that isn't easily reversible. I mean, right down to just, he's so thirsty to make himself the main character of every day of our lives. And I mean, look, the Knicks went on a 13-game playoff win streak. He inserted himself into the middle of that. They lost, then they came right back and won again. I mean, he's cursed in every possible way, but he's so desperate for it. And I agree with you. I think it's because he knows one way or another his time is up, either when he's still in the White House or not. And I frankly hope he doesn't die, because I don't want J.D. Vance to be president of the United States, but he's in a really terrible spot. And I want to go back to the Epstein files for a second, because I think it's important to note the fact that they felt the need to go to the Situation Room tells me that they believe the White House is compromised, that they were so scared about what they were going to talk about in that room that they narrowed it down to the most trusted group of people that Donald Trump could manipulate, which is Kash Patel and Dan Bongino and Caroline Leavitt, J.D. Vance, and the rest of them. And they didn't want any foreign government to know what they were talking about. And that tells you that all the things that they're covering up in the Epstein files, because there's still so much that they haven't unredacted that they're supposed to by law. There's so many images that they haven't released. They still haven't really investigated the ranch in New Mexico. They haven't investigated all the lockers where all this blackmail material is supposed to be all across the country that Jeffrey Epstein had so he could blackmail rich and powerful people in the country. They didn't want anybody else to know. So they went into the one room in this country that, as far as I know, unless Tulsi Gabbard's been in there with a bug, the foreign government in Russia cannot find out what's going on. So they are scared shitless about what is in there. And my guess is it goes further than just the abuse of little girls and little boys. I think it comes down to murder, violence, mayhem. I think there's some eugenic shit that they were doing. You just get into it deeper. It's really, really scary stuff. And again, I just think it's important to say this, because Democrats do this thing all the time where we go, it's not normal. It's not normal. This isn't right. This is against the norms, blah, blah, blah. But nothing that's happening in Washington, D.C. has anything to do with you. And the average person is crying out for some kind of economic relief, okay? They are struggling to make their bills go far. Everything's so expensive. The job market's a mess. They're being forced to work multiple jobs. You're getting taken advantage of in a million different ways. You can't afford your health care. If you get sick, you go bankrupt. Most people don't have money saved up. Most people don't have enough money in a 401k to feel meaningfully invested in the stock market, which makes them sound stupid when they talk about how it's a golden age of America because the Dow was over 50,000 for a couple weeks. It's embarrassing. And if Donald Trump would just stop and take a deep breath and do literally anything that might make a difference in your life, even a small thing, his poll numbers would go back up. Okay, but he doesn't understand it, and that's why they're going straight down, and he's down with everybody right now. And I want folks to understand it. I'll hand it back to you, Adam, is this man is so fucking unpopular There was a poll this week from an A-plus rated pollster that has Democrats winning men broadly in the midterm. That's how bad this is. Even men in this country, like, God love us, Adam. Okay, we're some of the most problematic people in this country as white dudes. Even white men are like, nah, I'm kind of out on this. Like, this isn't working for me anymore. Everybody's pissed, and they have every right to be. And every day he's just throwing up the middle finger at you. He literally said that he doesn't care about our financial situation before. And then he said that all the people complaining about what his administration's doing, he called them ingrates this week. And he was like, we built this country. We built this country. No, fuck you. Regular people built this country. Okay. It's just, it's disgusting.
He literally said he loves inflation, which is crazy.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Growth or something. I thought it was funny when you were like, if Trump would just take a step back, take a deep breather. I think that's like a really funny imagery because that's the least Trump thing possible. Could you imagine Trump first? He's like, you know what? I need to have some self-awareness and calm down.
How are they not like trying to get a stimulus check out? Like, I just, there's just basic shit, like political shit, even if it's just full of crap. Okay. How is this man not able to go, I feel your pain and I understand that the economy's not going well. I just want you to be a little bit more patient because the tariffs are going to work. We're going to get out of this war in Iran. You're going to be so much safer. If he could just do that, I'm pretty sure his approval rating would go from 32 to 38. Okay. That's the difference between like winning Texas and not winning Texas for us. They can't do it.
He comes out one day, he's no longer orange. It was all just a bit. He's like, guys, I've been trolling you for the past. I'm just a normal guy. It's not orange. I'm not narcissistic. We've seen him though.
Like when they do a bad spray tan thing, and you can see his neck collar here, and it's just like it's bad. It's
on a serious note. It's all real. We're all in the situation. And you said one thing that I want to expand on a bit. You were kind of musing and asking, what is Trump's signature policy? Because it's a really, really good question that we've touched on a little bit. Let's walk through some of his signature policies. He had sort of a no news, no new war vibe going on during the campaign that it was harder for us to pierce. But his legacy on foreign policy is going to be the failed Iran war, where he tore up Obama's agreement, where Obama works so fucking hard to get that. Mm-hmm. He tore up the JCPOA and now cannot get anything better and is likely going to unfreeze more funds. His signature economic policy, we talk about tariffs, tariffing every country with the idea of bringing back, you know, some sort of manufacturing boom. It didn't work. Manufacturing investment is down and unemployment is up. As someone says in chat, immigration, that's a pretty awful legacy to leave too. Like, we've used this line on the show before, but if Obama were underwater on healthcare, his signature policy, his legacy would be nuked. Donald Trump is currently underwater on immigration, both interior and exterior. The interior immigration is stuff like ICE, the interior enforcement of this. And ICE is so incredibly unpopular due to Donald Trump, due to Kristi Noem, due to the actions taken, due to the deaths of Renee Good and Alex Preddy. The exterior enforcement, I mean, it's a little bit more popular than Trump's ICE handling, but still, people are not happy with how immigration is going because Trump didn't fix anything. He didn't remedy anything. He just grandiosely told people to go F themselves, temporarily shut down the border, and thinks that's going to solve anything long term. No, he couldn't get through any legislation, which kind of, in a way, if you think about it, he hasn't gotten through any actual legislation to fix any of these problems. The War Powers Resolution, he went without. He's stepping over that. The tariffs are illegal, unconstitutional. With immigration, if he would have actually gotten some border bill that was like humane, I know this sounds crazy, if he would have gotten some border bill that's like humane, makes sense, steady-handed, then we would probably be sitting here like, yeah, at least Trump did something on the border, but he didn't. He just shut it down. So his entire legacy is going to be around these short-term dopamine-centered marketing schemes that he did that ended up not actually helping the American people. When he got into office, I was a little bit worried that what he was going to do, I guess it's not worried, but I was thinking what he was going to do was just sit back and let the economy roar off the back of Biden's accomplishments. Mm-hmm. You know, let the Chips and Science Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, let all of these acts do their thing. He would have been in a much better position if he would have just sat back and let it rip. But he repeatedly has shot himself in the foot and hoisted himself by his own petard. And now he's getting to a point where it's all self-inflicted. A war of choice, tariffs of choice, ruining the economy. This brings me back around to the Kennedy Center and his name being removed. I think it's just so funny. It's such sweet irony that he tried to narcissistically, grandiosely put his name on the Kennedy Center. Like, for real? The Trump Kennedy Center, does it have to be titled that? And now it's getting chiseled away bit by bit as his legacy is.
Well, and we're gonna remove whatever they build. You know, like the I'll give them a little bit of credit. The one like half decent idea they have is like Trump RX is not a bad idea. Okay. It's marketed terribly, in my opinion. And he made it all about himself, which is really stupid.
Maybe like the Trump baby funds, like everything else is bullshit. I don't want to give charitability or anything. Imagine destroying the country. And then one of your advisors comes up with like a slightly good idea. So you just put your name on it.
I'm actually going to tell you the Trump baby funds are a bad policy idea. And I'm going to tell you why. And I realize that they are a co-opting of a Democratic Party policy because Cory Booker, God love him. I love Senator Booker and he's been a client of mine for a long time. I don't like the baby bond stuff. And Kamala had this idea in the campaign too.
A lot of Democrats, I think.
But it's frustrating to me because nobody wants to build the infrastructure to solve this stuff is that what they're doing is they're saying, we're going to create a program that incentivizes you to have more babies because you'll get, I don't remember how much they get, but they get an amount of money that goes to the baby bond that's supposed to pay for the college. So it accumulates over time. Yeah. What it really is like one, it's going to get so many people to have more kids. And then you don't build the infrastructure for the country to handle having more kids because right now there are states all across this country where there is not enough childcare centers for people to be able to go to work and leave their kid with somebody that they can trust. And then the cost of it is $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, not to mention the fact that our public education is a mess. But you know who baby bonds are really good for? Wall Street. Because now the federal government's going to give $2,500 for every baby that comes that's going to go into a fund. A Wall Street investor then takes some percentage of that every year over time, on and on and on. Instead of what they should do is make public college free for everybody, which is the simple basic thing. But Wall Street doesn't make any money off that, so they don't want to do it. And then they don't want to build any infrastructure because Donald Trump and his kids aren't going to suddenly get into daycares, mostly because they probably shouldn't be allowed within 100 yards of a school, given the fact they're all over the Epstein files. So it's bad policy for the wrong possible reason. It solves nothing but creates more problems in the economy.
It's like putting putting duct tape on a sinking ship rather than actually just fixing the holes. But that being said, after Trump's repeated shooting himself in the foot, it's like the least harmful of like all of the economic policies. Sure. I know some families that have taken advantage of it, and how I guess we'll see how it like plays out over time. There's definitely better ways to do it, like free college or actually helping. Like if we're going to allocate $1,000, then it's probably not the best way to do that. But
I would force some of these colleges that have massive endowments, and I'll say that including my alma mater, Notre Dame. Like, and Notre Dame's doing this now on their own, thank God. But like these colleges with massive endowments, they should be offering people an opportunity to go there for free and covering that based on their endowment. And I think it's well within the rights of the federal government to do that. It drives me crazy. But you asked again, is like, what is Donald Trump's signature accomplishment? I would argue.
I want to hear what chat says.
Tell us.
And then Mike, I want to hear what you said.
Here's what I think his most signature achievement has been, and he achieved it yesterday. Elon Musk is a trillionaire. That's what he did. He handed the keys to the kingdom over to Elon Musk so that Elon Musk could do two things. This is what Doge was really about, guys. They didn't cut any actual government spending. They cut some stuff here and there that was bad, like cancer research for kids, but they didn't save the government any money. Elon went in and he secured all of his government contracts for Tesla and SpaceX, and he removed people throughout the federal government who stood in the way. People don't remember this, but on day one of the Trump administration, when Elon took over Doge, he removed the head of the FCC. It's not the FCC, the... why am I blanking on this, Adam?
Wait, what did you say to Elon?
You're the head of the FAA, excuse me. Sorry, everybody. It's Saturday morning at 9:30.
He gutted the CFPB as well.
Yeah, and they gutted the CFPB, but he gutted and removed the head of the FAA. By the way, there was a plane crash like the next day, which is like really bad timing for them. But he removed the head of the FAA because he was trying to enforce regulations on SpaceX. So he immediately made it easier for him to do whatever kind of space exploration that he wants. Now they have this massive IPO for SpaceX, which is just totally ridiculous. So Elon Musk has gotten everything that he wanted out of this administration. The Epstein class has gotten everything that they wanted out of this administration. They got their tax cuts. If they need a pardon, they've been able to get themselves out of prison. If they need a favor, like Donald Trump for like $500,000 reversed a rule that was protecting people all across the country who are in nursing homes right now, because the Biden administration had passed a rule forcing these nursing homes to have a ratio of staff for each person who was there. And they slashed that. And so these nursing homes all across the country are now removing staff. So there's people who don't have jobs right now. And then there's seniors that no longer have the care that they need right now. And it's all because some rich guy who's worth like $100 billion gave Donald Trump $500,000, right? So this keeps happening over and over again. These people are just doing so well. And I think we just have to acknowledge in this moment in time, and I think it's beyond a partisan issue, okay? Like I'm a extremely partisan Democrat. I believe the Democratic Party is way better than the Republican Party, even though they are far from perfect. There is a class of people that no matter who's in power, no matter what's happening in the country, they win. Every time we're mad at each other, every time we're arguing online, every time we're bitching and moaning about God knows what, including on this show, there's somebody who is profiting at the other end of that. And I'm absolutely tired of it because 80% of this country, if not 90% of this country, is getting royally fucked. Yeah. And the vast majority of people are doing everything right. And these people are doing everything wrong. There are crypto fraudsters that are on the streets right now. There are drug dealers that are on the streets right now. There's January 6th cop beaters on the streets right now that Donald Trump has put out there because they have the right money. They have the right connections. It's just, it's wrong. So to me, Elon Musk is a trillionaire. And I really, truly, I don't give a fuck how much money Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or any of these people have, provided that there's a social safety net and a society where people can work hard and take care of themselves. We went from a world where my parents, and I met your mom this week, by the way, she was lovely. So I'm going to say my parents because it's a different generation. I learned how young your mom was this week. But like, it's my parents. My dad was able to get a government job. He worked for the FBI and he made probably at most, his best year was probably like $100,000. We grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, single family income. We had a lovely home with a nice neighborhood and a nice backyard, a good neighborhood. I got a good education at a public school. They have ruined that for the vast majority of people. Now to maintain a quality of life similar to what my parents had, my dad working a 40, 50 hour a week job, both people in the relationship need to work. They've screwed that up. And meanwhile, it's impossible to buy a house. The average home buyer now is 40. The price of a home in this country is like $500,000. The price of a car is significantly more expensive. So people can't afford to own stuff anymore. They've screwed it up. But good news though, Elon Musk has $1 trillion and I'm supposed to just like clap like a seal and congratulate him on his ingenuity. Most of his businesses are built on the backs of government loans and contracts.
Exactly. Most of it's built off the Obama era subsidies. And then now he doesn't give back into the government. You know, I wish Republicans would engage honestly with this wealth issue, because no one's saying that you can't be successful in America. Like, you and I are both pro business, pro being successful.
We're both small business owners, buddy. Exactly. Like that's one of the beautiful things about America, is you can move up the ladder by being having some ingenuity.
Exactly. And no one's even saying that Elon Musk can't be rich. Like, you're free to be rich in America. But what we are saying is that you have such a disproportionate amount of wealth that you're using it to fuck over other people and re-rig the system in your favor while buying social media to influence elections and consolidate your power more and more, therefore, you know, ruining contracts for NASA or other places so SpaceX gets more. That is an insane thing. And as you said, when we're living in a time where there's not fundamental social safety nets in America, and then the companies that America helped build up, like SpaceX, are then saying, we're not really going to pay taxes back into the system. That is effed up. Nobody is saying that you can't be, you know, rich. No one is saying that you can't be building something. If Elon Musk wants to own his businesses, wants to do this, that is fine. I don't want to seize it. I don't want to seize his business from him. What I do want is for Elon Musk to pay his fair share, to not be taking advantage of these tax loopholes to then affect our politics, and especially not running the entire political system of the United States and Europe into the ground by pulling us to the far right. He has been surgically and intentionally on Twitter trying to spread a lot of animus towards different racial groups and different groups overall. You made this point beautifully when you said that these rich people benefit from this division. Elon Musk is probably the best example of that. If you go to his Twitter account, he is constantly spreading conspiracy theories about election fraud, hatred towards trans people, like dishonest numbers about Black Americans or crime statistics related to certain minority groups. Like, he intentionally spreads disinformation about crime stats to paint certain racial groups as violent or trying to do this. And that's because he's using his money to gain attention, to influence the political system. There's that case that happened over in Europe. I can't remember the names, but somebody was, you know, stabbed, and then the police accidentally got the wrong victim. Elon Musk has tweeted about this 200 times over the past 10 days after the family asked people not to politicize it. The family of the victim said, please don't politicize this. We don't want to turn this into some like weird racial thing. It's not what we're trying to do. Elon Musk still did that. Is still trying to divide people because he knows that he can continue to gain power. That is cynical. So one more time, the Democratic Party should be okay with business, especially small business, especially helping small business owners. Kamala Harris had some small business policies that were rather good. That's not what we're seeing. We're seeing a cynical accumulation of wealth at the expense of the American people as the wealth gap widens. And we need some way to hold them accountable. Mike and I made a video about this yesterday. It's a lot of tax code stuff. We need a consumption tax. We need to make sure we're doing it carefully, because an unrealized gains tax is a little bit of a hard thing to do. I mean, I'm sure we've talked about this. It's kind of a really hard policy, but there are ways to tax Elon Musk in a surgical, precise manner so that he's paying back into the system. He consumes a lot of luxury items. We should have a consumption tax on Elon Musk every single year.
Well, and one of the things is, like, we've proven that because billionaires, trillionaires, like Elon Musk, God, I haven't adjusted my talking points yet in my head for that. That's fucked up. But like, Elon Musk is only a trillionaire because of the federal government. And Trump has been able to prove that you can use the power of the federal government to bring these people to heel. Okay. Jeff Bezos is basically like acting like a lapdog. He went on CNBC to talk about how great of a president Donald Trump is because he needs government contracts too. So when we're back in power, let's bring these guys to heel, because that's the answer. Okay. You want to be a billionaire? I don't care. You're going to do this, this, and this. Okay. Don't tell me you can't drag Jeff Bezos into the White House and tell him that the workers for Amazon who were delivering my packages don't have to be pissing in a bottle every day. Like, you can solve that problem. Jeff Bezos has that power, and we're going to have to use our power in that same way. And back to Musk for a second, because there's an insidious of the way that Musk's racism plays out. I think he's a fascist, a white supremacist. I mean, he's basically a neo-Nazi at this point. Somebody said that in the comments. I have no problem saying that out loud myself. But our mutual friend Mehdi Hassan made this point not that long ago when he was on Patrick Bet-Davis's show about the number of refugees that the United States is bringing in. Trump has dramatically reduced that number. And I'm going to get this wrong, so I would encourage people to look it up if you want to know more. But something like 98% of all of the refugees that we have brought into America since Trump took office have been white South Africans.
I mean, yeah, sounds exactly.
It's crazy, absolutely crazy. And the only reason that's happening is because of Elon Musk. Elon Musk is exporting people out of white South Africa because his family took a hit after apartheid, and it's been a big thing for him. That's part of the reason that he is such a out racist in this way, and they're abusing and manipulating the federal government. So again, every conversation that we have should really come down to who's benefiting and who's not benefiting. That's the bottom line. Same thing with the war, okay? Who's doing well in the war right now? It's people who are manipulating the market. It's defense contractors. It's oil companies. It's corrupt politicians. That's basically it. You're not getting anything out of that. Who's benefiting by Elon Musk being a trillionaire? Him and a handful of other people that are benefiting from the same policies, not you. You're being told to eat cake. And here's the final point I'll make. I'll hand it back to you is these people, and I did News Nation this week, and Leland Vittert was like, Mike, you know, the only form of government that's ever been proven to fail is socialism. And I was like, there's so many things wrong with that to Sunday, but like, it's socialism is not communism. And if you are genuinely worried that people are moving toward an ideology that you do not like, that you do not understand in socialism, okay, and that's socialism is increasingly popular in this country, it also increasingly doesn't mean anything because Republicans just call anything we want to do as socialist. I mean, they would call Medicare socialist, even though it's one of the most popular programs in the country. Same with Social Security, Medicaid. And by the way, Mike Johnson got caught on tape this week talking about his secret plan to cut those things if they win the House in November. Thank you again for the TV ads, Republican members of Congress.
I love inflation.
Oh my God. I love inflation. It actually makes me mad where it's that easy, where I just like run that ad. I want to work a little bit harder when I make an ad for my clients. But these people simply do not care about us, simply do not have any plan to improve our lives. And it is just absolutely gross. And if you are worried, if you're sitting there, and this is what I said to Leland Vittert. I'm like, if you are scared that socialism is coming to take over, then you need to fix your shit with capitalism. Yeah. You need to show people that capitalism actually works, because my entire life, I've been on this planet for almost 40 years now. My entire life, I've been told if we cut taxes for billionaires, if we deregulate everything, if we make everything great for big businesses and billionaires and now trillionaires, because that's what we have now, that it'll all trickle down and everybody else will do better. And it simply doesn't work that way. You want to fix the economy, fix it from the bottom up. Make sure that 80% of Americans have what they need to live a life of dignity, to buy a house, to have a good paying job, to take care of their family, to be useful in their community, to have a hobby and take a vacation. I'm sorry if I already said those things, but it's like, my God, they want to fix it all from the top. They want to make sure that the 300 richest people in this country get more and more and more while you get nothing. And at a certain point, if they don't solve this, and if we don't solve it at the ballot box, guys, I do think we get to a place where it's pitchforks and torches. Okay. I don't want that. I'm not advocating for that. I don't want there to be a violent solution, but these guys are so greedy and so disconnected that it's going to be inevitable. If you hate what happened, I hate what Luigi Mangione did to the CEO of United Healthcare. I think it was disgusting. That's the kind of thing that's going to happen every day in America, unless these people start making sure that people have what they need. Because you're just going to get more people that are unwell, that are angry with a legitimate grievance, and then they have no other place to go because people don't believe in democracy. They don't believe that we can solve these problems. And when that happens, democracy exists. And I'm sorry, I know I'm ranting a little bit longer than I said I would. Democracy exists as a way to solve our differences and improve people's lives without having to turn to guns and swords and God knows what else, okay? If that stops functioning, and we're dangerously close to most Americans believing it no longer functions on any meaningful level, the amount of violence that you will see in this country, you will have a Charlie Kirk assassination a week, and I do not want that. I don't want that for them. I don't want that for us. It's going to get really bloody and really messy. We have to solve it now. Yeah, nobody wants this.
That's the thing. You know,
I hated what happened to Charlie Kirk. Scared the shit out of me.
It was pretty fucked up.
It was awful. Yeah, I don't want. I have. I think about it all the time. Like that could have happened to either of us. I mean, we're not as big as Charlie Kirk. I mean, you're getting there, but like, that could happen to us.
Yeah, I've been to a lot of Trump rallies, and we went with no security, and now we kind of toned down how we do these things. But I guess I want to end off with one thought that builds exactly on what you're saying. And it's the reductive ideology of Republicans and even some older generation people who think that all of the kids are turning to socialism because we're being brainwashed online.
Right.
You debunked this perfectly. And the Zohran Mamdani campaign was a good microcosm of this. You see all these older Republicans, these people of all ages, they say, listen, the kids in New York are turning socialist because they just don't know what they're talking about, without realizing that Zohran Mamdani didn't win because he's socialist. He won because he spoke to this angst, this apathy that voters are feeling. Zohran Mamdani's campaign was actually a vessel for younger people to socialize and to get out there and to actually, you know, build towards a better future. And when young people have trouble being capital positive in any way, of course they're going to turn against a system that has not allowed them to be capital positive. So many of my young friends are told if they go to college, they're going to get a better job. They go to college and then they're saddled with student debt while they don't get a job. Then you introduce medical debt. Then you introduce rent or trying to buy a house. And many young people are drowning. It's not like young people are supposed to be super well off or rich. I understand that. But the promise of the American dream, where if you get a degree and play your cards right, you're fine, that has been slowly, slowly peeled away by people like Elon Musk, who want to continue to increase their wealth at the expense of all of us. So again, this reductive analysis of Americans turning socialist is all that. It's reductive. It's actually apathy and angst towards a system that has not allowed people to succeed. I don't think we should have a revolution in America. I think that our system can be refined and reformed to have more social safety nets, maybe something like the Nordic model, where if you are struggling in this country, you have a baseline social safety net so that everybody has the opportunity to become the best version of themselves they can. That allows our harmonious institutions in which people can live, different groups with different beliefs, with different goals, can all pursue their own self-interest and maximize their own success. I can build my own business, you can build yours, and people who don't want us to build a business can go do their own thing and fuck off over there, right? Like, we can all live in harmony, but we are seeing that being pulled away. We are seeing that slowly trickling down, and you said it perfectly. If we don't fix something about it, it's only going to get worse. Nobody wants it to get worse. So Donald Trump is desecrating not only the monuments around this country, not only the legacy of this country, but the economic standing of this country, the American dream overall. For somebody who claims to hate Ali Khamenei, who is the leader of Iran that he killed, Donald Trump sure does like putting his face on everything, just like Khamenei did. I was watching a documentary about Iran. You know what I found striking? Just a final thought. In this documentary about Iran, the elder Khamenei would place his face and name across every building, across every single, like he had banners of his face, paintings. And I remember thinking, huh, that's a bit much. That's a bit superfluous. Then I realized, wait a minute, Donald Trump does the exact same thing. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just add one more thought, and then I think we can close this out, buddy, is because you said that nobody wants this to get worse. They do want it to get worse. I think let's be clear about that. And I view this as a warning to our party, the Democratic Party, the leaders of our party, and whoever we elect in November of this year, whoever we elect in 2028. And I believe that right now in the trajectory that we're on, Democrats will win the presidential election, given how bad things are. And I don't think there's any chance of them really getting much better economically. But there are a lot of people who want it to get worse. And the chief among them, in my mind, is Nick Fuentes. And not enough people are in my party, in our party, understand how ascendant that he is, how his numbers are getting bigger, how more and more people are following him. And he is actively trying to destroy the Republican Party so that he can rebuild it in his image in the same way that Donald Trump did 10 years ago. That will be even worse. I had lunch with a friend of mine 2 days ago, and he said, you know, I remember how mad I was during the George W. Bush years, and now to me, they seem like the good old days. And I was like, there's a chance that 10 years from now, this will seem like the good old days to us. where we will miss Donald Trump, where we have like rationalized it because there's somebody worse sitting in the Oval Office. And that's the warning I make to my party, the Democratic Party. We have to do a better job. If there's a massive blue wave coming in November and we take back the House and we take back the Senate, and then 2 years later we elect whatever, President J.B. Pritzker or something like that, we have to be prepared to use power effectively, to get shit done and make people feel like we can, one, accomplish something for them, because the number one thing that people say about Democrats is they seem nice and well-meaning, but they can't get anything done. And they admire the Republicans for being able to try to get something done, even though they can't really do it either. But the stuff they get done is about lining their own pockets. They create an illusion, but they penalize us because they think we're weak. We can't be weak anymore. We have to be willing to use power the way that they do. Otherwise, what'll happen is we'll get back into office simply because Trump is a shitty president and the economy is bad. We won't improve the economy for people. And then 4 years or 8 years later, we're going to be in the same situation with President Nick Fuentes or President Tucker Carlson or some other stupid shit like that for somebody that arises. And they are going to use power even worse than Donald Trump has. Because the way that he has expanded executive power, the way that the Supreme Court has allowed him to do that, the way that Congress has allowed him to do that by abdicating their responsibility through the authorization for the use of force, the fact that you can now, essentially hundreds of miles off of America's coast, you can bomb the shit out of a boat because you're calling drug dealers terrorists, that's going to create a new precedent for the next Republican president that wants to abuse power. And they're going to start claiming that people like you and I are terrorists, Adam. And they're going to start claiming that we work for Al-Qaeda or stuff, and they're going to come after us. And they're going to invade our cities. It's going to get worse unless we show the American people a better way, because they're going to keep turning to extreme solutions. And those extreme solutions might be Zohran Mamdani and AOC, who I think would be far better, obviously, than any Republican president. Or it could be Nick Fuentes. And that's the scary moment in time that we're in.
You know, I texted this to you, but I have to pee very badly. So thank you all so much. I just became, right. I love you all. If you want to help support us, become a free or paid subscriber.
Yes, please.
It's going up on YouTube after, so you can check out Mike Nellis on YouTube or me on YouTube. Thank you, Mike. This was a great episode.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you.
Peace.
Talk to you all later.